miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Alright, Revolution Radio, it's Saturday. And it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Lost a little honey on the lone highway.
Let me pour another. Hello and welcome to the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. Today's date is Saturday, June 20, 2020. And welcome to the corporate takeover of the United States of America and of the world. While the corporate media rings the alarm bell of a greatly overestimated pandemic and fans the flames of racial hatred through the use of dubious and possibly scripted events, small businesses across the country are withering away while big corporations scoop up additional market share like pigs at a trough. Misdirection is the order of the day. While the general public is at each other's throats and arguing about statues and historical events from hundreds of years ago, the landscape of the economy is being permanently transformed into a corporately owned biosphere, virtually unblemished and uninfected by those pesky, independently owned businesses. Traditional morality is being rapidly replaced by a new morality, a morality defined by your willingness to follow government decrees, decrees to wear a mask, and your willingness to stay away from other human beings at all times. Yes, well, you know, I guess the only group activity that's being encouraged right now by our corporate and political overlords is protesting the death of St. Floyd of fentanyl. That seems to be about the only group activity that is being encouraged, isn't it? Yes, and you know, defending a small minority's right to engage in sodomy is of the utmost virtue. And that's going to be a big plus to society, believe me. And that's secondly only to defending a tranny's right to use the woman's bathroom and to terrify any little girls who might be in that same bathroom as well. Yes, that has all been defined as a virtue in today's new morality. And it's a morality based on subservience to government. That's really what they're trying to unveil to us, a morality based on subservience to government. Not a good thing, guys. And, you know, part of this new morality is to, you know, defend the rights of invading hordes of illegal aliens to settle into your country. That's virtuous now. You know, never mind the fact that they might be carrying, you know, a whole plethora of diseases or possibly be hardcore criminals or gang members. You never know, but don't mind that. No, somehow it's virtuous to defend a invasion by illegal aliens. And trying to defend, you know, borders or the culture of your country is now racist. And apparently it's all based on colonialist exploitation and xenophobic thinking. Yes. So in short, really, you know, we live in a world of inversion where everything is being turned upside down and inside out, all on purpose. And really with the express purpose of trying to shoehorn an unwanted agenda into people's public consciousness. Yeah, but only if we let them. It's time to say no. Okay, I'm going to take a quick look at the chat room and see who is aboard here on Revolution Radio. Hope everyone's having a good Saturday. So we got snippets, Comet, fact or theory, Giuseppe from DC, Eagle Flower, Mitchell, Greenheart One, Henosis, Dirt Engineer, Troy Boy, Lady Horse, Grog, SJ, Mario, and Popsicle Toes. So we'll keep an eye on that and see how things go. Yeah. So, guys, welcome to the open-air, free-range, insane asylum that we call Earth. Yeah, things are just getting a little crazy, crazier by the day, it seems like. And it's kind of hard to take it all in. But, you know, isn't it amazing how thousands of people can gather on the streets to loot and riot? Protest, peacefully protest. Apparently, that's not a problem. You're not going to spread the virus doing that. But pretty much any other group activity is guaranteed to bring society to its knees again with a massive infection of coronavirus. You know, I even saw an article just the other day from the mainstream media declaring that the protests, did not spread the virus. Somehow they know already that that wasn't a problem. Very convenient. But of course, you know, going to the beach or having a drink at the local bar, that's a problem. Or, you know, even eating a meal outside on the patio of your local restaurant. That's dangerous, guys. Don't do it. But, you know, burning down the local Wendy's, hey, that's part of your right to protest, guys. And it's perfectly safe. So don't worry about catching the virus there. And another thing that seems to be safe is waiting in line for unemployment assistance. I've seen some footage recently of, you know, hundreds of people standing in line trying to get some kind of assistance because they lost their job due to this, this emergency that we're living through. And apparently shopping at Walmart, that's perfectly safe. But shopping at your local independently owned business, that could be a little dangerous, guys, and potentially deadly. And, one thing I'm learning is that working at an Amazon warehouse is pretty much perfectly safe, very low chance of a problem there. But working at a meat packing plant, deadly. Don't do it, guys. Yeah, so it's really starting to look very much to me like anything that helps move the agenda forward is perfectly safe and does not spread the virus. And if I didn't know better, I think there was some kind of conspiracy at work here. But when anything happens that conflicts with this agenda that is becoming all-encompassing and pretty much a 24-hour-a-day clown show on the mainstream media, anything that contradicts that agenda is being accused of spreading the virus. It's pretty much guaranteed. Just start looking for it, you know? This emergency really is there to prevent the spread of anything that contradicts the agenda. It's sort of like a one-stop shopping center for all of your agenda needs, isn't it? Yeah, you know, this COVID virus is sort of like a security blanket for the agenda. Anything that contradicts it, we have to stop it because it's dangerous. And, of course, the deadliest activity that you could possibly engage in now at this time is not having sex with strangers that you meet online. No, that's safe. Anthony Fauci said so. No, the most deadly activity you could possibly do is attend a Trump rally. You know, like the one that's, I guess it's going to happen today in Oklahoma. And, you know, that's pretty much sure to spread the virus to unprecedented levels. It's pretty much going to be like a, you know, a petri dish of deadly infection in there, guys. You know, you're just going to be walking around in a petri dish of virus and other deadly diseases. Who knows? And it's kind of funny. The mainstream media is calling it this new rally. It's a firestorm of controversy, a firestorm. I mean, you got to love this hyperbole that the media constantly engages in now, huh? You know, everything's a firestorm or a bombshell. Everything's a bombshell. You know, this new book by Bolton, it's a bombshell. Yeah, and Bolton's a real sympathetic kind of character. You know, he's a man of virtue that he's built his whole career on standing up for virtue. No, actually, pretty much the guy's entire career was built on encouraging war. I mean, this guy is a warmonger of the highest order, and I don't see why anyone would care what he thinks or want to buy his book. I mean, the guy kind of looks like a insane walrus, you know, like a very, you know, a delusional walrus, very angry walrus. Yeah. So, you know, it must be kind of amusing for our corporate oligarchs to see the general public at each other's throats, like we are right now, huh? I mean, they're playing this race card and, you know, and all these ridiculous demands and this phony revolution that we're supposedly witnessing. It's all fantasy. It's a clown show, a new TV show, a new reality show for us to watch. But meanwhile, you know, the real thing that's actually happening is that, you know, the corporations worldwide are scooping up market share and furthering their takeover of the economy, while, you know, small business, independent business, they falter and are kind of left a flap in the wind. And really, guys, very few large corporations are going to fail during this economic crisis. And I think really it's a future economic crisis. We're really only at the beginning of it, at the precipice of it. It's just beginning now. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but this is already baked in the cake. And, you know, the big problems with this economy were already in place before any of this nonsense emergency happened. And, you know, for the most part, this virus really is a cover for the utter failure of how our economy has been run, really at the very least since 2008. Of course, it began well before that, but the major problems came to a head back in 2008. And now this is all just a cover for it. And, you know, have you guys noticed the enormous amounts of money that corporate America is now donating to, you know, Black Lives Matters and other associated far left causes? Hundreds of millions of dollars is pouring in. And all the while, you know, while our economy has been almost slowed to an idle, you know, they've made almost all regular business very difficult to run. I know they're reopening things, but expecting a restaurant to survive long term with 25 or 50% capacity is not realistic. So anyway, while all the real economy is really at a standstill almost, hundreds of millions of dollars is being poured into these far left causes. And in some cases, billions of dollars. Bank of America recently committed to a $1 billion donation to Black Lives Matters and other causes. You know, and that's billion with a B. That's $1,000 million. So just imagine, you know, Bank of America, for example, They're making so much money, even as the economy is at a standstill. And no one even knows when it's going to start to pick back up. They're making so much money shuffling papers and adding zeros to computer screens that they can just donate $1 billion, just give away $1 billion to purely political causes. I mean, not even things that would actually help people's lives in a practical sense. Like, how about, you know, building some tiny homes for all the hundreds of thousands of homeless people that are in the United States right now, people sleeping on the streets of all races and creeds or whatever, and gender, you know, hundreds of thousands of homeless people, but not one mention of them. How about $1 billion to start building tiny homes for homeless people? Or how about $1 billion to start constructing low-cost houses that people, you know, poor people or people of low income could buy at a very low price? No, you can't do anything like that because that would just encourage bad behavior or something like that. But instead, they're giving this money to purely political causes that aren't going to really affect people's lives. It's a bunch of, you know, virtual signaling and making it sound like they're doing something great. But in reality, none of this stuff's going to really help people's lives. All it's doing is setting people against one another. Or how about $1 billion to start creating community gardens on a mass scale? Can you imagine what that would do? Just $1 billion in creating community gardens for people? Wow. I mean, that could really change not only people's food bills, but also, you know, participating in growing food is a really healthy and oftentimes a sort of a spiritual experience. It helps ground you to the reality of this earth. But no, it's better to dump all this money down a black hole, you know, this black hole of social engineering and racial quotas. And, you know, just for example, I think starting about in 2007, 2008, just as an example, Ecuador, which is not a wealthy nation by any stretch of the imagination, started to spend government money to build, you know, small, low-cost houses for people that are poor. And they were allowed to buy, to purchase these houses at a very low cost, just to make it so these families actually now own something. For the first time in many people's lives, they actually owned a small house. And, you know, if a country like Ecuador can do it, certainly wealthier countries are capable of doing such things. But there's no talk about anything like that. You know, and it's really quite amazing that these corporations have so much money just sort of sloshing around that they can just give it away to purely political purposes. Quite amazing. And all the while, you know, 40 million Americans, more or less, have lost their jobs. But somehow these corporations are still awash in money. And, you know, recently I kind of looked up some, you know, the salaries for some of these CEOs of some of these major corporations. And what I kind of found is like $25 million per year seems to be about one of the average salaries that these CEOs make. And of course, that does not include stock options or other goodies like, expense accounts that can add up into the hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. It's kind of hard to calculate the value of all these stock options because they keep that sort of stuff pretty close to their vest, so it's harder to calculate. And I was just thinking, what these delicate geniuses that run these corporations, they can't work for less than $25 million a year, while the average employee is supposed to struggle away at $15 an hour or $10 an hour. I don't think so. I mean, this is where people ought to be thinking about, not hey, let's defund the police and, you know, give reparations to every black person, which I don't even know how you calculate who's black. Like, what percentage of black do you have to be to get your money under reparations? I mean, the whole thing is pretty screwy, and it's not going to help people in the end. But, you know, even with this $25 million figure for these CEOs, imagine over 4 years, that's $100 million. And, you know, it's a well-known open secret that stock options are actually usually at a far greater value than their salary. So you could easily double these figures. So $25 million really in reality becomes $50 million per year, which would be $200 million in 4 years, you know, and even after taxes. I mean, don't think that these CEOs actually pay, you know, 40% of their income to taxes. It doesn't happen. You know, these guys have, you know, armies of lawyers and accountants that are rigging the systems and playing with the numbers. So that doesn't happen. So, you know, while we're all arguing about things that happened 100 years ago or 150 years ago, the disparity between corporate America and Main Street regular Americans has never been greater. And it's only going to increase. It's only going to increase as this new economic crisis continues to unfold. You know, because these things sort of happen slowly. It's like a rotten tree. It can stay standing long after it's dead and completely rotten inside. And so the real damage to our economy isn't going to be revealed until the process is closer to completion. So you can be sure of that. We're not going to know the real implications of what's actually happened until later. They're using these distractions so we don't think about that. And, you know, it's amazing how a lot of these tech companies have donated enormous sums to these Black Lives Matter causes and other associated causes. I looked up Google, $12 million to these causes, just purely for political mumbo jumbo, nothing practical to actually help people. And Facebook and Amazon are both donating $10 million to groups that so-called fight racial injustice. Now, I don't know what that means or how you accomplish it. You just throw money at it and it's just going to go away somehow. And apparently Apple is pledging $100 million for a new racial equity and justice initiative. That sounds good, doesn't it? A racial equity and justice initiative. Wow. That will challenge the systemic barriers to opportunity and dignity that exist for the communities of color and particularly the Black community. Wow, $100 million. Just for a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Instead of building houses or community gardens. No, just going to create some foundations so we can launder our money more efficiently. That's what it comes down to. Another example, Walmart, $100 million over 5 years to create a new center for racial equity. CEO Doug McMillon said the center will seek to advance economic opportunity and healthier living, including issues surrounding the social determinants of health, strengthening the workforce development, and related educational systems, blah, 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 blah. Bunch of mumbo jumbo. Nothing practical to actually help people. And it's all based on this racial division concept too. You know, it's like screw white people, screw Native Americans, you know. Target $10 million commitment to advance social justice through the supporting partners like the National Urban League and the Afro-American Leadership Forum. Okay, that sounds great, yeah. Great stuff, huh? It's not going to amount to diddly squat in terms of practical solutions, though. And all it's going to do is increase this racial division, so they keep people at each other's throats, so we don't notice what's really going on. And, you know, it seems like many of these corporations are protected somehow from the economic realities that we all face. You know, I mean, think about it. You'd think that right now corporate America would be tightening their belts at a time like this, where, you know, the economy has slowed down so much. But no, the coffers are wide open and they're funding this revolution. Not out of virtue, but self-interest. Okay, guys, at the bottom of the hour, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Okay, guys, we're back for the second half of the first hour of the Scorpio Conspiracy Show here on Revolution Radio. I was just taking a look at the chat room, and we've got some good stuff going on there. Anyone that's listening wants to join in, come in on to freedomslips.com. Come on into the chat room and let your voice be heard. Snippets was just saying a couple of really insightful things here. Their hubris kills it for them every time eventually. Look how Gates' hubris pushed so hard, he woke people up. That's very true. And he's also inadvertently showed how odious and anti-human this agenda really is. So that's a very good point. I think they're overestimating their own likability, when in reality, these people are actually loathed and hated by the general public, much more so than they could ever imagine. So before we hit the break there, I was just talking about how, you know, how all these corporations, they're just giving money away to these Black Lives Matters and similar causes that aren't going to help anything in terms of practical reality. It's just a bunch of virtue signaling. And, you know, people need to remember that corporations have only one reason to exist, and that reason is to make money. There's no other reason that these corporations exist. So this virtue signaling, it's completely phony, and it's a cover. And what they're trying to do is pour all this money into this so-called movement that really doesn't have that much support. I really don't believe it does. I think this is somewhat of a paper tiger. You know, you see these people in the streets, they got, you know, thousands of people in the streets, but they really don't have that big in numbers when you calculate the entire population of the country. So they're pouring money into this, these corporations, to try to puff this phony movement up like a blowfish and make it seem much bigger than it really is. And really, you know, this isn't really truly a far left cause like they want us to think. It's really just corporatism disguised as the far left, you know, and it's dressed up in the hot pink colors of sexual liberation as well. So it's really just, this is a corporate disguise. And I really do think this is a paper tiger. Does anyone out there listening really believe that rural America is going to want to live in the type of society that these people are trying to push on us right now? Does anyone out there really think that kind of shit's going to fly in rural America? Come on, guys, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. And, you know, we have a huge wealth divide in this country, and it's bigger than it's ever been. And I see this divide not primarily along race, but between corporate America and Main Street America, between corporate America and real life. Because remember, these corporations, they have access to this easy, cheap money that the banks are just handing out to them at virtually no interest right now. It's almost free money. And imagine just getting free money. You could probably do pretty well in life too if you invested it halfway intelligently. So yeah, this wealth gap keeps growing And, you know, there's more fabulously wealthy people than there ever have been. And there's more poor people than there's ever been, And all the while, the middle class keeps shrinking. So we got a lot of divergence going on that are keeping people from seeing what's really happening. Yeah. And so here's what has really been on my mind here recently is that, okay, we have an economic divide and a cultural divide, a huge cultural divide. And that's expressed not exclusively, but in many ways along the lines of rural America and big cities. So what happens when a large enough group of people no longer want to live under the dictates and the rules and the supposed morals of this behemoth that we call the federal government? What happens when there's enough people that don't want to do that? Well, you know, if you look at history, it's sort of a natural course of human affairs that when it hits a critical mass, when enough people don't want to live under that thumb anymore, the tendency is to want to break away and create their own new system of government and economics and morality, or return to the founding principles of Western civilization and Western morality. So, you know, when this hits a critical mass, you have a state that might want to leave the Union. And, you know, there was a big movement to get Alaska to leave the Union. It was never talked about on the media, but there was quite a movement to secede from the Union for Alaska. And, you know, Texas has talked about it. In fact, you know, Sarah Palin's, I believe, ex-husband now, he was involved in this Alaskan secession movement. So it's something that's been kicked around for a long time. And I think that might be part of the reason why the Confederacy is being demonized right now. And it's being brought up so much in the media right now. That, you know, that's why we have to, you know, remove any statue of the Confederacy or any, you know, last vestige of Confederate history. And that's why it's being demonized. Maybe that's the reason, because they want to remove any trace that there was a group of people that did not want to live under the dictates of the federal government anymore. And of course, they want us all to equate the Confederacy or any state that wants to break away. They want to equate it with, you know, racism and slavery and, you know, et cetera. That if you think that way, you have to be racist and, you know, a bad person. So maybe that's the real reason why we're seeing this rush to tear down all of the Confederate statues, not because of people being so offended by a statue, but because they're afraid of the idea or of the thinking that people might want to leave the federal government, especially as they continue to unveil this odious and nefarious plan that is not going to be well liked by the average person. And of course, you know, this brings us lastly to the concept of CHAZ, or they've renamed it CHOP. Now, obviously, you know, CHAZ is a phony psychodrama that's being allowed, you know, to happen. It's being encouraged to happen by the powers that be, you know, all to create the impression that this, you know, this revolution or this movement is much bigger than it really is. Because obviously you can't just take over other people's property in downtown Seattle and call it a country. That's ludicrous on its very face. It's absurd. But what about the idea of bringing back the Homestead Act? You know, the Homestead Act was a huge part of American history, all the way from the 1860s into the 1960s. And the Homestead Act just pretty much just allowed people to be granted tracts of land if they lived on the land, took care of it, and, you know, built some kind of a house, and took care of the land. After a certain period of time, I think it was a year usually, then they were granted ownership of that land. And that even continued into the 1960s. There was still tracts in the desert that were still up for the Homestead Act, but people had to do some development, et cetera. But this all came to a screeching halt when the BLM, not Black Lives Matter, no, when the Bureau of Land Management took over huge swaths of the country and declared it to be federal land. And many people consider, you know, that to be the biggest theft of land in American history by far. The BLM now controls 10 million acres, which is 40,000 square kilometers of land that was is effectively just taken by the federal government. And it coincided with the end of the Homestead Act. So there's many, many ideas that could be thought of and brought forward instead of this phony Chaz, you know, reality that they're trying to put forth. There's many new ideas or old ideas that could come back into place that could transform our world. And with that said, I want to bring on Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how you doing, buddy? Come aboard. How are you?
Ahoy, Captain. I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hearing you good, man. Good.
Oh, good, good, good. Man, that amazing amazing intro. You really embraced a lot of the salient, lucid points of what's going on. You know, it's so funny that this is really an all-out assault on our nationalism, on this country, by these globalist Agenda 2030 types, one world government, although it won't be one world government because China, Russia, and the BRICS won't go along, but bipolar world government and one digital currency, well, actually two digital currencies, but it's just so vulgar and offensive. And what is missing from this is a real government of the people, by the people, for the people. Right now, it's a government of the parasites, by the parasites, for the parasites. And we're witnessing a monstrous wealth transfer with all these other distractions. It's like a magician. Don't look at what my left hand is doing. Focus on my right hand with my wiggly fingers and such. So it's just crazy. Over.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how what if they took $1 billion and started funding community gardens all over the country? I mean, just imagine that alone, what that would do, not only for people's pocketbook, where you essentially have very, very low cost produce for neighborhoods, but it would change people's consciousness and to get in touch with working with the land and planting stuff and bring their kids. You know, that alone could totally have a huge impact. Or how about $1 billion worth of low income housing, like I was talking about, not apartment buildings, but small houses,
right,
for people to live in and to own.
Well, how about $100 billion for jobs, to pay these people to learn to garden, to pay these people to fix the roads, to pay these people to, if they have certain acumen or skills. And this isn't just black people. This is the low economic class. This is all a class warfare. And if we had a real government, a government of the people, an adversarial government against transnational corporations, against globalist banks, against these parasites, and our government needs to be like the family Rottweiler who loves its family, but it sees any strangers or any threat to the family, it becomes a snarling machine of protection and punishment. And the parasites are so few in number, they need to fear the countries, and they need to understand if they're going to run the kosher casino known as Wall Street, they're going to pay a huge price, a fee to be able to do so. And that's where the money can come for everything we're talking about and more. And then you just got to go a little farther and realize that these various cabals, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the cancer industrial complex, the vaccine industrial complex, those things should not be for profit. Those should be for the good of the nation. And a great surgeon, a great doctor, he should be a multimillionaire, absolutely. A great nurse, she should make a great amount of money because they're doing what's right. You know who shouldn't make any money are these globalist pharmaceutical companies who use this country as a petri dish of guinea pigs and testing these drugs on us in the market, not adequately testing them. And then the buffoon Reagan was so scared about not having vaccines, and the young weasel Fauci said, well, if you don't give them indemnity and immunity, we won't have vaccines. And it's ridiculous because no vaccine is worth it. And there's this catch-all term for vaccines, and what it needs to be broken down. But the average sheeple is so dumb and so entrained to just, oh, I just trust my doctor. I trust the lab coat. I trust the hallowed church of the hospital and the clinic. It's so wrong. People need to.
Well, I think you're touching on a good point, too, that certain things need to be run as essentially utilities, yes, not for profit. And people are still going to make money.
Well,
but you're not going to make billions and billions of dollars. And, you know, this argument that, well, if people can't make billions of dollars, then they're not going to want to develop new drugs. I don't believe that, because any new drug might help somebody's mother or their uncle or their brother. So I don't believe that line of reasoning any more than I believe the line of reasoning that, well, these delicate geniuses that run, that are CEOs of corporations, they can't work for less than $25 million a year. You know, I just don't buy it.
And they don't even do the work. It's the vice presidents, the general managers, the heads of the divisions of development and engineering. It's the sharp human resources person who makes the company function. It's such a joke that everywhere you look, the parasites, the oligarchs have created this feudal system. They never fail to eventually turn anything, a good entrepreneurial effort, a new industry, into a feudal system that they can control over.
Yeah, and Giuseppe, I really like the term that you've used several times before, which is parasitical elite. I think that's a much more descriptive term. Calling these people the elite, it gives them too much respect and respect that they don't deserve. Parasitical elite is much more descriptive and accurate.
Yeah, man, absolutely. They're Satanists as well. They do not serve the divine. They do not serve the light. They are playing a long dark game where they do all kinds of things we would find absolutely unfathomable to maintain their lineage, to maintain their power. So that they really need to be taken off the chessboard. Over.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back all the way to possibly the Nephilim or the fallen angels that bred with the daughters of men, because it doesn't seem like these people are truly human in the sense that we understand human beings. They look human, yes. But I think there's some other kind of genetics going on there that is beyond what regular people imagine or would want to do to other people.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's just bizarre that what they get away with. But, you know, to me, all the great books, and I've read pretty much all of them in the last 40 years, they're really history. And they're really instruction manuals. And to turn them into dogma is a major mistake. But there's so much wisdom, so much historical knowledge that we don't embrace today. And it's half our problem.
That's true. There's a lot of allegory that's not meant to be taken literally. And I think it's sort of like historical fiction. It's based on a true story. Although, you know, when you retranslate something, you know, 50 different times from 10 different languages, it tends to lose its original meaning sometimes. But there's a lot of wisdom and historical accounts that are that go back to all these ancient manuscripts.
Right. And what's really amazing is when you start digging into it, the reality we're told, like, oh, human history started 6,000 years ago, and how much they suppressed the crypto history and the crypto archaeology, and there's so much that went on for millions of years, and they poo-poo it. And what's so amazing that's really blown it up in the public eye, thanks to the internet, is there was a German archaeologist who stumbled upon Göbekli Tepe, a Turkish farmer, thought it was just a mound of dirt, and he started to dig it away, and he found the top of a spire of some type of creature. And he called the university, and they contacted a German guy who realized it would be suppressed. And for years and years, he began with a quiet effort with archaeologists unveiling it. And he didn't reveal it to the public until he really had it cleaned away and proof, so it couldn't be suppressed. And that's, you know, dated the part they've seen. They've used ground penetrating radar now to show that it's massive, and it dates back 20,000 years or more with testing, carbon dating. And there's so much.
Yeah, that's true. And there's a lot of evidence too that, you know, the pyramids and the Sphinx are much, much older than we're told. And, you know, I maybe about a year ago, I went and visited a lot of these megalithic sites in South America. And of course, you know, the official story is, you know, these primitive Indians built these perfectly fitting together walls and structures with, you know, massive rocks, you know, using, you know, ropes and logs like they did the pyramids. But a lot of people actually told me, I talked to indigenous people, they actually told me that their history says that they found these monuments. They were there when they got there.
Absolutely. I mean, when you bring the cross trained people, like you bring climatologists in to look at the base of the Sphinx with all the water erosion, and the liars poo poo it, but it's so obvious water erosion. And, you know, it's funny that the pyramids, evidently, best guess, as far as I understand, were some type of global energy grid system, which, you know, we can't even fathom today. And it's just, but going back to my initial point, I love this kind of talk anyway. We should do shows about stuff like this. Is everything is controlled by these globalist parasites. The history, the archaeology, the lore, the religions now to large part. And so it's just so insane that you cannot trust any of these false idols. They're all trying to brainwash you over.
Yeah, and they don't want to have people understand that there were very advanced civilizations well before we were told. It's just the 6,000 year mark is pretty much when there was some kind of a reset. Apparently, if you look into ancient history, built into the game that we're in here, is a sort of a reset button that seems to occur about every 11,500 years, more or less. And, right. And that's happened more than once. And, you know, like you said, with the Sphinx, that's at least, there, I guess, according to that, Dr. Shock from, MIT, that's at least 11,000 years old, if not more, because you can see clear signs of water erosion. Like you said, it's pretty obvious once you see it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm texting our guests and I'm not seeing a reply, so I don't know what's going on with Paul. So I guess we'll just continue
on. Okay, hey, well, just try to give him a call at the top of the hour, and if he can't make it, then we'll just go on. We got plenty to talk about here.
Hey, should we test that? I have a short clip from, let me try sharing the screen again, turning it on. And let's just test a clip that shows the insanity. It's less than a minute. The insanity of these weak-minded Antifa BLM types. And really, let's see if you can hear this. And we're about to go right now.
No, I'm not exactly the voice that people need to be hearing right now.
Do you hear that?
In fact, I need more confirmation that this
yeah,
is real.
Yeah, I'll check with the chat.
But I need more confirmation that this is real. Trump supporters got an email that said this email is for patriots only. You've been identified as one of President Trump's fiercest and most loyal defenders, and according to your donor file, you'd make an excellent addition to the Trump army. It goes on to tell them that they would get a limited edition camo Keep America Great hat to let them know that you are the president's first line of defense when it comes to fighting off the liberal mob. I don't know if you know, Hitler made Jews wear yellow stars. This feels like the reverse of that.
When I see these...
Did you hear that, Scorpio?
Oh, yeah, that was good. The chat room saying it's coming in good.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
It sounds like we all need a group hug here and some kind of play therapy or something like that. Yeah, that's... The emotionality of how we're supposed to behave and believe, it just limits higher thinking, and that's where they want to keep humanity, you know, just in this snowflake paradigm.
Yeah, it's and you know, this is intentional. There's a woman named Charlotte Iserby. She's been on Rents quite a bit over the years, and she talks about how real education since like the 50s has been purposefully dumbed down. They took out civics courses. They took out anything that makes you appreciate what a great blessing this country is and the system that we've had is, and replaced with this slow introduction of Bolshevism, right? And
yeah.
Really, you look at today, that's exactly what's going on. And it's insane that they're, instead of learning from history and being adults and talking about the Confederate... oh, here we go.
Okay, well, look, you're making some good points, and Giuseppe, you get a gold star for that, buddy. Okay, everyone, we'll be back here after the top of the hour break. Everyone hang tight, and we'll be right back. Okay, guys, we're back here on the Scorpio Conspiracy Show on Revolution Radio. Hope everyone's having a good Saturday. We're here handing out the gold stars, and I'm here with Giuseppe having a conversation. So, Giuseppe, were you able to get a hold of our guest?
No, I tried calling twice through this shared call, and it said unavailable due to technical network phone error. So, maybe
looks
something...
like someone doesn't want Paul coming aboard. He's too close to the truth. Well,
right.
No matter. We'll see if he can come on later. But in the meantime, Giuseppe, I want to sort of pick your brain here a little bit about some of these recent events that have been happening. You know, this thing in Atlanta where this, you know, black guy was shot by the cop. It seems to be possibly a real event. It doesn't look like an obvious fraud like this George Floyd thing. I'm not entirely certain if it was a real event, but it looks more plausible, let's say that. And there are some strange anomalies in this. Like, for example, there was a SUV parked right behind George Floyd's car. And during the entire encounter, even after the cops started shooting and wrestling with the guy, the car never moved. I mean, either that guy really wanted a hamburger from Wendy's, or the car was, you know, parked there for some reason. This whole thing is a strange event. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, back when I was a kid, if a drunk was pulled over by the cops, a lot of times the cops would just make him park his car, take him home, tell him to sleep it off, and don't do it again. But we've progressed way past that point now. What's your thinking on this event in Atlanta?
There's a lot of anomalies. In fact, if you look at the entire witness's account that they were talking to him for like a half hour, allowed him to get out of the car and walk around a little bit and fail some of the drunk tests. And then they tell him to get back in the car and move the car. And then they decide at that point, they're going to arrest him drunk driving, and that's when you start to see the struggle begin and all that. But it's, yeah, it's really peculiar. And but I think it was real, and I think that one thing that is ridiculous in this new era of Saint Floyd of fentanyl, and that you no longer, if you have any type of pigmentation darker than the typical Caucasian, that you're absolved of any action. Whatever happened to personal responsibility? If you're drunk and you take the chance to go get fast food and you get caught, why don't you just pull up your pants, literally and figuratively, and take your medicine like a man, right? That's the whole problem with these low impulse, low intelligence, low self-control types, is they get violent, they can't take their medicine, they can't take personal responsibility for their actions. That is everything that's going on in this insane chapter of our country right now.
Over. Well, and it's just, I agree with what you're saying, but, you know, first of all, the guy was, you know, grabbed the guy's weapon, the cop's taser, and tried to shoot him with it. So it was hardly like the cops to say, hey, let's go kill this black guy for fun.
Yeah. You
know, that's how they're trying to, you know, portray it on the news. But, you know, it's just, it should, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this because, okay, if they've lowered the legal limit for drinking pretty low, 0.08 is two beers. Like in some states, it's 0.08. So you could drink two beers and be legally drunk. And what is the crime if you drive home and don't hurt anybody? I don't know. I think we have such a, you know, the police have become a revenue generating force for right. the prison industrial complex. And, you know, they hand out tickets like candy for the most minor infractions. So I think there's a lot of things wrong with the police, but coming to the conclusion that we should defund them and not have police is obviously an invitation for martial law
right.
or absolute chaos.
Yeah, you hit it directly on the head that this fascist state and another cabal, the prison industrial complex, once again, you know, going back to what my statement was in the end of the first hour, that if you put a robust fee on the kosher casino known as Wall Street, especially derivatives gambling, like 5% of every transaction, there would be trillions of dollars to not imprison marijuana users, not imprison alcoholics, and you know, prison is for violent killers, violent rapists, violent assaulters, and yeah, man, it's be so easy. If the sheep would just wake up and take control of their country, and that's all it would take. Over. Not easy, though.
Yeah, well, you know, $20,000 is the average cost for a drunk driving incident, at least in California. You pay a massive fine, and it feeds this whole system on what could possibly be a victimless crime. I'm not, of course, coming out in support of drunk driving. Don't get me wrong. You know, but I think there's other solutions to this kind of problem. And the idea that this cop is facing life in prison or possibly the death penalty is utter insanity. And it just shows you how they're willing to sacrifice anyone at this point to move this agenda forward.
Right. And that is the you know, we've said this before, in fact, publicly and many times, that this is like late night ESPN championship poker. The globalist parasites are going all in, and they want their Agenda 2030. They want their Western world digital currency. They want their contact tracing and use this technology as a means of enslavement, not as a means of education and enlightenment and freedom. They want to clamp all this down, and the silly mind control operation of wearing a mask, a worthless mask. The only time a mask makes any sense is if you are sick and you're sneezing and coughing and expelling liquid, that's how you infect other people. Other than that, a healthy person does not need to wear a mask. It's just offensive and insane, the lies.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Snippets in the chat room is making some good points about how this the guy that was accused of drunk driving in Georgia, he was actually released from prison. He was already in prison. He was released from prison because of the COVID crisis. And I know I was talking on earlier shows how this releasing people from prison during this crisis is just going to create more problems. And sure enough, here we go. And I think this is on purpose as part of a master strategy
chaos. The Bolsheviks in Russia emptied the prison. This is neo-Bolshevism. Everything they're doing was done in Russia starting in 1917. I mean, it's just they really are just going back and looking through the globalist parasites through their greatest hits. And it's like, here we go. We can use this one again. We've been working on this country for so long, dumbing them down, softening them up. And holy cow! If the citizens of the United States don't wake up soon, they're not going to have this country anymore. Over.
Yeah. So you think that was a real event? It seemed to be real to me. I'm not seeing anything that's extremely odd in it. You know, and I don't see how the cops are supposed to let this guy take their taser away and shoot him with it. But, you know, it's just a shame that cops aren't trained in a different manner. They're trained to escalate the situation rather than de-escalate. And I think that's not the fault of individual officers. It's the fault of the policies and the training of these people. You know, I recently saw a clip from a police training seminar where they bring in this guy. He's quite well known. I don't have his name offhand, but he was a former Army Ranger. And a special forces dude, right? And this guy goes in and does seminars for police all over the country. He does like a couple hundred of them every year, basically instructing the police like, well, you're probably going to have to kill someone someday and you shouldn't feel bad about it. And here's how we do it in the Army and blah, blah, blah. Just sort of normalizing this idea that, well, yeah, you know, you're just probably going to have to shoot some people rather than trying to find, you know, other ways to interact with the public. And they're teaching the cops that the general public are the enemy, because I guess a lot of them go get training seminars in Israel, of course, where they're, you know, learn similar stuff.
Well, early in my life, my first professional job was as a reporter and a columnist for the largest morning daily in Wisconsin in the 80s. And, you know, when you covered the overnight police desk, this is when you're low man on the totem pole or woman, that's what you do. You go sit there and listen to the scanners and up until the deadline, since the morning paper, so the deadline, absolute hard deadlines, about 12:30 a.m., maybe 1 if it's a huge event. And then you if something happened, then you go interview the person for the next day's newspaper. And so I interviewed a cop who hadn't had to use his sidearm in like 31 years. And he was so shook up that he had to shoot somebody that he couldn't just solve the situation. And it was, you know, really powerful, man. It really affected me. And you contrast that, which is only 40 years ago, with this urban war zone that they're dealing with now, and they're inadequately trained. You know, these guys that are hired as cops could easily be the thug that they're entangled with. You know, they're not trained in this. You know, they're not verbally high skilled. They're not. So you get it. It's just
yeah. Well, you know, and this militarization of the police began under Reagan in the 1980s, and Sergeant Jack McLam was one of the early crusaders that tried to tell the public what was happening to the police back in the 1980s. He spent more than 20 years trying to warn the public about what was happening to the police. And, you know, the other bizarre thing is they have all these programs where the cops are given tanks and all kinds of military equipment from the Pentagon. You know, like, why do you need a tank? to enforce the law in a city, you know. So the whole militarization of the police has been very deliberate, and we're seeing the fruits of it now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the local cities and towns freaked out when these drug gangs and these drug lords were coming into the cities, and the felons had sophisticated, powerful AR-15s and fully automatic rifles and guns, and the police just had sidearms, and they were like freaked out that they were getting outgunned in some, like in LA and Chicago and other places, and it was a partial response to that. But I also think it was intentional, because as everyone who investigates it knows, this whole ongoing drug pipeline is controlled and by the black op types, because they're literally making billions upon trillions of dollars, both in profit and in funds, to do whatever they want off the books, away from congressional oversight. And lastly,
yeah, that's a very good point. And you know, here we've had close to 20 years of war in Afghanistan, and lo and behold, now we're having a opioid crisis. We've been having it for some time. Well, gee, I wonder what the connection is there. You know, the Taliban were going to wipe out all the poppy flowers. And under the United States military, we've been protecting the whole operation and making for very low cost, high quality heroin to hit the streets all over the world. And of course, you know, then we've got the infamous MENA, Arkansas with the Clintons. And it's how they're funding all kinds of bizarre projects and creating deliberate destruction of society and people's lives. I think it's very intentional.
Oh, absolutely. Look at the proof is in the great investigative journalist effort by Gary Webb, who revealed that the whole flooding of the urban areas with cocaine was intentionally done by the CIA, and ultimately paid for that expose with his life. It's sad. He was a real heroic, old school muckraking journalist. Over.
Well, didn't he shoot himself in the head twice or something like that? Right.
Yeah. I wasn't sure the suicide worked the first time, so he took aim and fired again. I guess that's realistic.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So, what are your thoughts now on, you know, now that this George Floyd thing has been kind of ongoing? That event to me looked extremely fake. We've covered it in previous shows, but I noticed when they brought his coffin, you know, they had did you see it on this horse-drawn carriage? like he was like a member of the royal family or something. And they had a big glass door, you know, so you could see the coffin as it went down the street. I couldn't help but notice that coffin, it looked too small for a man that was 6'4" tall. I've heard it's either 6'4" or 6'5". Either way, that would have to be a pretty large coffin. It's a shame someone didn't go up there with a tape measure and check to see if it was, you know, big enough to fit someone of that size and girth into it. Did you notice that when you saw that?
Oh, I did. In fact, I was on some alternate Twitter-like channels that are, not for the mainstream public. And I saw some footage this week I'd never seen before, whereas there's a camera angle of way before what you see, where there's two other cops dealing with St. Floyd of fentanyl, and he's resisting getting in the car for a long time. And they're, you know, it's weird that they didn't like just, you know, it's easy to kick someone at the popliteal crease, which is behind your knees, and kick that, and then collapse the knees enough and push them in. It's easy to do. Cops are trained in that, but they weren't doing that. And then it's really hilarious that the short little Filipino cop and Chauvin come walking up, and Chauvin literally has his hands with both thumbs in his holster, like he's the old West badass, and it seems so staged even then. And then I saw another clip where they slow it down, and when they're got the St. Floyd of fentanyl on the stretcher, he doesn't have legs, and the producer shows a black CPR dummy that is the same thing, and it looks just like Floyd. So they must have put that CPR dummy with no legs in the gold coffin.
Yeah, I saw that picture. It's like, yeah, what happened to his legs? It's like they melted, like in the Wizard of Oz, you know. And you know, I couldn't help but notice that the cop, what was his name, Tao or something? Tao.
Something, yeah, something.
Yeah. And the guy was like just a little bit taller than an Oompa Loompa, you know, from the Wizard of Oz. And, you know, it's like, aren't cops supposed to be a little bit bigger than that, you know, to try to, you know, keep things in order? I don't know. He just seemed like an awfully small statured person to be a police officer.
No kidding.
And it also, I noticed when I rewatched the video one last time, is that it looked like the majority of that cop's weight was actually on his back leg.
Right.
And
right,
there was only, you know, a small amount of his weight was actually on the guy's neck. The whole thing, it just, I'm not buying any of it. And look what they've done with it. You know, it's amazing.
Well, you know, let me turn on the share screen again. And first, I'd like to say, like, much like the op that's going on with Floyd, there are, and the protesters, they're like 0.00001% of the normal population. And this is all for the media. The media distorts everything. And you know, it all boils down to the individual. And this next clip is really interesting. And it's a little longer, so we can do something that if you want to stop and discuss it, it's about 4 or 5 minutes. But it's fascinating because there's this black lead singer of a band called Bad Wolves called Tommy Vext, V-E-X-T. And he gets it all right, and he's not buying into any of the BS. And the quality of the video is from a phone, and he's in a hotel room. And so he's using markers to like delineate here, this line means this, and you can pick it up. But the funny thing is it boils down to the individual, whether you're black, brown, white, purple, green. Of course, those aren't real colors, but it's up to you to, if you want to make something in your life, you got to pick yourself up when things go wrong. It's always about the individual. And that's really the great gift of this country. And some people are born into horrific circumstances, and they somehow manage to be fantastic adults and functional. I mean, they have their wounds, and they suffer like anyone else would from those wounds, but they go beyond it.
Right.
And that's what's so wrong.
Okay, good. Yeah, go ahead and play that clip. I just want to add one quick thing here, you know, in relation to this cop, you know, kneeling on George Floyd. He did it for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I don't know if you caught that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is the exact amount of time, or the exact time that one of the planes hit the Twin Towers.
Oh, wow.
And then Patrick Rabbit just pointed out that it was in the Twin Cities. So that's a lot of coincidences there going on.
Yeah, man. Okay, let's test this out. Here we go. Tommy Vext,
okay,
laying some truth on us. And if you want to stop and discuss, right, just say pause, okay?
No, go ahead. Just pause it when you think it's appropriate.
This is basically how things have been explained to me. So right here, you have MSNBC, CNN, ABC. This one's going to be Fox News. You're going to put that guy on the side. It says highlighter, not Hitler. Calm down, everybody. And here you have Black Lives Matter. So who owns Black Lives Matter? Who invests in Black Lives Matter? Well, the Clinton Foundation. Who else? George Soros. And this is Antifa. So now you have an event. The major news networks have to cover the event. An African-American man is killed by police. It doesn't matter that he's a felon. Doesn't matter that he put a gun to a pregnant woman's stomach and did 5 years. It doesn't matter that he was in jail for cocaine. It doesn't matter that at the time of his arrest, he was on methamphetamine and fentanyl and was positive for COVID-19. Let's just throw all that out. That doesn't matter. Okay? Unjustly murdered by a police officer. So, the call comes down the pipeline. We gotta organize. So, Black Lives Matter organizes all these peaceful protests, right? and they're all protesting, and they're fucking outraged justifiably. But what else do you have? You have Antifa, who's paid for by George Soros. These are highly trained professional rioters and escalators. So they move in and disperse throughout all the different riots, right? And then the Clinton Foundation pumps money into promoting this stuff on social media and pushing the movement. And so the networks all scramble because they're filming the social unrest. As these people are protesting, these professional rioters and looters start setting fires. They burn cop cars. They set up brick pallets. They destroy public property. And they stay in the shadows and hide behind and make it look like Black Lives Matter and African-American culture as a movement is unruly, violent, and insane.
Okay. So that's
really interesting. Of course, so many roads lead back to the Clintons and George Soros. And because really, when you get right down to it, the Clinton Foundation was really just an international money laundering operation and a way that they could, pump money into whatever causes they want.
Oh, without a doubt. And I just saw a graphic last night, as a matter of fact, on Twitter, of the updated Clinton body count graphic. And it is a big image. Hundreds of people died suspiciously in the Clintons' subhuman quest to power. Unreal.
Yeah, they even have their own word, the Arkanside. You know, it's even birthed its own word.
Yeah, that is something else. I mean, holy cow. And what's interesting about this fella, and we can go back and listen to a little more in a moment, but he's the lead singer of a very hot heavy metal hard rock band called Bad Wolves. And they, in 2018, they were going to do a cover. You know, that's the way you break these days, or is do a new cover. So they were going to do that catchy song Zombie by the Cranberries, which was, you know, four chords repeated, but very moving and powerful. And so they were going to have Dolores Reardon, the songwriter and the singer of the original, sing. And then she committed suicide, sadly, because she had emotional problems due to alcoholism and all that. Sad, very sad. And what they did is, these guys weren't making a ton of money at that point. They hadn't broken big or anything. He recorded the lyrics, and they donated all the money made to Dolores Reardon's children. So decent bunch of guys. And it's so funny that, you know, just because his whole body's tattooed, he's a muscular guy, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I don't trust him. And that's unfair, right? He's a profoundly smart and decent guy. And here we go.
Okay. We're at the bottom of the hour break. We'll listen to a little more of that when we get back. Everyone hang tight. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back here on the Scorpio Conspiracy Show on Revolution Radio. And we're here with Giuseppe, and we're going to go ahead and finish up this clip talking about these phony riots and the manipulation of black people. That's been going on for a long time. And, you know, these record companies have been pumping out some of the worst possible, rap music in terms of promoting degeneracy and gang culture. So go ahead, Giuseppe. Where do you want to take it now?
Okay. I'd also like to quickly mention that, you know, Revolution Radio is completely listener supported. And if you folks can, please donate. Nobody's paid, the host, the technical people. In fact, some great technical people helped us iron out all these details from last week, and now we can listen to more of the fascinating Tommy Vext. Here we go.
The media then fucking films all of this shit, and this is all you see on your entire feed. But George Soros and Ted Turner and fucking Turner Broadcasting and the Rockefellers and the fucking list goes on, the Rothschilds, they own most of these media companies. And the media companies are making billions of dollars by advertising, because everyone's transfixed to the news and everyone's talking about it. So what happens is that the same people who instigate the event and organize the protest and escalate the protest, make money off the African-American community's outrage, and further deplete the morality of the United States. Additionally, while all this is going on, Hillary Clinton and her buddies are all on trial, and they don't want this shit on the news. So this is a huge gaslight, and people are not paying attention to what's going on. Now, why would they want to do all this? Because they're afraid, first of all, that she doesn't get her appeal and she has to testify. She might be found guilty in a court and then be found guilty of treason, which would mean she would either get jail time or she would be sentenced to death for being a traitor to America. The DNC is not going to be looked in a very good light in an upcoming election if that's the case. These people, right, the same people, these companies, all the same six big families, they're the ones who make off outsourcing all of our products and all of these services that we do.
Yep, I'm here.
I have our guest, Scorpio. Paul, are you there?
Oh, wow, a miracle. We are entering the Paulosphere, and hey, just for future reference, Giuseppe, we got to watch the F-bombs on the clips and stuff. That's the only thing we got to watch out for, okay?
Oh, yeah, he speaks French.
yeah, but that's kind of a not such a good thing here.
Oh, I'll go through and clean that up for next week. So yeah, we've got okay. Paul from California, legendary brawler.
Paul, buddy.
Gentlemen, thank you. Without addressing some of the kind of weird technical issues that have been happening between us, which, you know, are, I guess, not proper for discussion on the radio show, but I, you know, you two know what I'm referring to. It's just, it's beyond weird, and who knows? I'd like to think maybe part of it is my phone, or part of it. Maybe sometime we can have a more thorough discussion on these sorts of things. What it reminds me of, and this is actual true story, and again, I don't think it's related, but do you guys remember, you know, in that rash of all those fake shootings going on for years, the Elliot Rogers, Isla Vista, you know, University of California, Santa Barbara shooting? You remember that one?
Vaguely.
Yeah, sure.
So you remember it, Scorpio, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So essentially, that was the only so-called, you know, shooting that I did my own, you know, it's so-called investigation. What I did is I just made some phone calls, right? It's all I did. I called the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office and got bounced around a couple of times. I had a very interesting conversation with the receptionist. And then I finally spoke to the information officer, who was a female, and I actually looked her up online. Quite attractive, too, by the way. And we exchanged a few emails about the event, and she admitted in a couple of emails and the initial phone conversation that, you know, some of the things I was pointing out were interesting, and that, you know, she really didn't know enough to comment on it. The gist of the matter was, is I wanted to look at the police report, which I thought police reports in general are public information, but I was told I couldn't. And I had a few other interesting questions that I wanted to ask one of the detectives that investigated it. Basically, it had to do with the timeline and the condition about some of the victims. And, you know, for example, did they find bloody clothes on Elliot Rogers? And if his clothes weren't bloody, because remember, he stabbed three of his roommates before he went out and shot females at the sorority houses. So I just had these kind of questions like, you know, somebody I thought could tell me, all right, if he didn't have bloody clothes on, did they find his bloody clothes later? Did he ditch them? You know, that kind of stuff. And this didn't really go very far. And after maybe about a week or so, all correspondence stopped because I wasn't really getting anywhere. And by the way, I tried to go online and look at the death certificate because there's two types of death certificates in California, and one of them is for, you know, the official for the family, and the other is what they call a public information death certificate. And I was told I couldn't see that, okay, or they didn't, that wasn't available to me, you know, this kind of stuff. So it confirmed everything I needed to know without a lot of details. But the long and the short, the reason I mention this is this correspondence between me and the information officer at the county sheriff's office disappeared from my email, disappeared from my inbox and my sent folder. Now, I had actually shared it with a woman friend of mine, and she said that, you know, it was still in hers. You know, she kept, hers in a folder, but, mine was gone. Meanwhile, the thousands of other, you know, sent messages and inbox messages and so forth were all there, But these particular ones were actually just cut out of my inbox. And I
the suspicion that this is possibly one of these staged events and that the shooting didn't happen. Is that what you're alluding to?
Well, sure. That and the whole, confirming perhaps a little bit of paranoia. In other words, who am I? I'm just some guy that shoots off his mouth, right? I call into various shows and I try to inform and maybe entertain and just kind of, let it fly. That's the way I view myself, right? But I have a suspicion that, of course, these people and, whatever agencies and, so forth know all of us. I mean, they know who we are, it's just a matter of how much do they want to, play around. So,
I think anyone can be deemed dangerous that's highly perceptive and well-researched and is willing to talk to other people. I think, that's part of the reason why they're pushing this social distancing. They don't want people getting together and, exchanging information saying, hey, do you know anyone that's sick? Well, no, I don't. Do you know anyone that's sick? No. And I think they have a great fear of that right now because, the toothpaste is being taken out of the tube, so to speak, and it's going to be hard to stuff it back in there like it was before.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's a good point. And, we hear all sorts of talk on other shows as well, such as they're all in, this is their end game. They know that if they can't do it now and blah, blah, blah. I don't really know how much of that is true or is true. It's clear that they have an agenda. Their agenda can be discerned. What their particular plans are, we, find out moment to moment, don't we? Right. I mean, essentially, they basically keep us in the dark until they're in.
Well, yeah, we're
not
the club, as George Carlin said. But Paul, where do you think this is going? Like, what's the purpose behind these riots and this race card being played and trying to erase American history, essentially? Where do you think this is going right now?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, in my opinion. I sort of feel that they enjoy keeping us all in fear and all stirred up. As far as their plan goes, I'm not sure how much it's going to facilitate it. As you said earlier in the first hour when I was listening but unable to call in or even to get a text from Giuseppe, I received no text. I thought that was interesting. I couldn't. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Oh, I sent multiple texts, and when I tried calling you, it said technical network error on the phone line. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, one of the things I did, I haven't messed around with my phone that much as far as like settings and options, and I feel kind of like a dunderhead technically that way. I restarted it, which I rarely do. Most of the time, my phone's all the time, and it's just charging, But people have said before it's a good idea to turn it off and turn it back on again periodically. So, who knows?
Paul, see this as a desperation move or a plan B, or what do you think the purpose of all these riots are?
Well, I'll tell you what I do believe. You notice how quick, and you guys, I'm sure it did not escape your attention, how quickly the white people showing up at state capitals with guns went away the minute they did the whole racial thing. In my opinion, and of course, there's a number of ways to look at it, but look, you could see coming up that there was tension building. There was disobedience and defiance taking place. They didn't publicize a lot of it, but you can witness it. And I felt with people around me, the more I said things to people about the stupidity of the mask wearing and the hoax nature of the so-called virus, people were more and more receptive over time. And I feel they probably had this one in the can ready to go. I don't even think it was, to be honest, I don't think it was contemporaneous. I think that this is probably one of those things where they did it and it was ready to go. And then they just popped it on us because there's no body cam footage, right? Like you can go online and you can watch body cam footage of police shooting people. But this was, somebody's cell phone video and quote unquote surveillance video. So that's,
yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. And you hit on another really interesting point, Paul, about how, when the white people or people were protesting the lockdowns, that was apparently very dangerous and it was spreading the virus rapidly. But according to the mainstream media, these riots and peaceful protests happening now are not spreading the virus for some reason. Maybe all the fires burning down the Wendy's and burning down the buildings, it sort of, purified the air with fire, and so no one's getting sick from that. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, how could you counter that sort of logic? To be honest, I think Professor Fetzer should award you an honorary
checkmate. Okay, good. Giuseppe, what do you want to add in?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to start to yell, "Mute Paul! Mute Paul!"
Shut it down.
You know what's funny?
What's on your mind, man?
Well, you know what I was going to say is we didn't get the chance to do my normal what we talked about I wanted to do. So I would love to be a guest another time. Hopefully we can get everything right technically. So for today, I'll just be a caller. So to finish up the thought that I was having about your question, I think it's pretty obvious to me these people know exactly what they're doing. I mean, they are indeed, somewhat masters of human psychology and timing, and they are organized. I mean, that's the difference between us and them. I just heard a great talk the other day on National Alliance Radio by Kevin Strom, and I highly recommend on a regular basis go to National Alliance Radio and listen to Kevin Strom and his broadcast Dissident Voices and also all the archives of William Luther Pierce, because you will get the needed clarity and that perhaps you can start to really let it gel in your mind and try to communicate it to others, because we only have a limited conversational window with other people. I've known this for a long time. You know, you can't talk to them 20 minutes. You know, they won't take hours to read a book, and they're too busy to listen for more than 10, 15, or 20. So you have maybe a couple of minutes unless you get a rare individual. So, I mean, it's easy enough to point to people out that this is obviously a divide and conquer and a distraction. And I've met multiple black people, more than one or two, the last couple of weeks that are hip to this. They know. I mean, I was talking to a black guy the other day in the warehouse. He's wearing a mask. It's a hot, sweaty day. And I just go, "Hey, bro, what are you wearing that mask for? You got nothing to be afraid of." He's like, "You think so?" I go, "I know so. Believe it. I mean, you're just cutting off your oxygen. You know, you're reabsorbing your CO2. I said, "There ain't no virus to be afraid of. Don't worry about it." He goes, "Yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking that kind of thing myself." I said, "Well, just make the move, right?" Well, to my surprise and happiness, the next couple of days I saw him, he was working in the warehouse without a mask, right? And then, just the other day I saw him, and it's a big place, so I don't always see the guy every day. He had a mask back on, and I looked at him, and I said, "Bro, what happened, man? I thought you were on our team." He goes, "Well, my cousin tested positive." I said, "Okay, well, tell me more. What are you talking about?" "Well, my cousin, he got tested and he was positive for COVID-19. And I just kind of...
Is he sick? Was he
right.
sick, though?
No, I went forward with it. You know, he turns out he's 27. And, so he's, he had some, mild, quote unquote, flu-like symptoms. That's it. He's okay. But it's an unusual situation. But here's the deal. Nowadays, they got everybody paranoid, and this is, the overriding thing. They got everybody paranoid about a particular thing when my contention is it is nothing, nothing different than there ever was, whether it's 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 200 years from now. There's nothing different in the natural world. And I would love on another show to flesh this out more, because I've done a lot, of work on this, and it jives with everything you guys have heard. I mean, it jives with what Andy Kaufman says. It jives with Stefan Lanka. It jives with who's the other guy, Dr. Cowan?
Thomas Cowan.
But it's more than that. It's basically what I call a simpler, understanding of the natural world, which is based upon a synergy, okay, and a symbiosis. It's not based upon what they're trying to tell us, which if you remember Stefan Locke's presentation, what they wanted to do and what they've done is placed us on a war footing. Okay, we have enemies, bacteria, virus, all these contagious. They're the enemies, and we have to, we have to have a strong healthcare system, and you got to pay your healthcare insurance, and all this freaking nonsense. And so now somebody tells you tested positive. I told my acquaintance in the warehouse. I said, "Okay, well, what did they test for? What type of test?" "I don't know." well, okay, you know, I asked a series of other questions just to demonstrate to him, and that was my point, that we all don't know anything. We're living under this illusion, and we're just basically regurgitating stuff back that they say to us. Do you know in the last two or three
Paul,
months?
Paul, those are some really, really good points, and I totally agree. And, you know, viruses were so deadly and it could just spread all over the world and kill everybody, humanity would have been wiped out a long time ago. And so this is all false information. I totally agree. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I saw this clip from Tucker Carlson. Well, it's just a young girl kind of waiting to go to the Trump rally, right? And they're, you know, the mainstream media people were like, well, aren't you worried you're going to catch coronavirus? This is dangerous. You can't do this. This is a young girl, and she didn't look like she was, you know, upper crust or terribly educated. She said, I'm not going to wear a mask inside. That's my choice. And furthermore, I trust my own immune system, so I'm not worried about it.
Hey, let me tell you my mask-shaming story from Wednesday. My wife had oral surgery to remove an infected molar. And so we walk in to the dental office, the oral surgeon, and they immediately, I didn't even give them permission to use the infrared thermometer to check both of our temperatures. And they're, where's your mask? I'm like, we don't wear masks. We have a health reasons. My wife's asthmatic. I have lung damage from when I worked in a bleach factory when I was young. I have scarring. I'm not going to wear a mask. Oh, you have to wear a mask. And then they go back in and they talk to the surgeons, and I go, oh, it's state law that you have to wear it, even though the corrupt Governor Northam's dictates for phase two says right there you don't have to wear it for health issues, but they won't pay attention to that. So I'm like, I'll go wait in the car. And my wife had to put a mask on because she had to get that infected tooth out. So I go then, and you know, she's all loopy from the drugs they used, and I go get her prescriptions. And then I'm just like, well, what do you want to eat? And she goes, well, I could really go for like some chicken soup or something. So there's a deli, really cool deli a few miles away, old school New York deli that's down here. So I call in the order, and they have it, so you can't even go inside anymore. It's like an old Carvel walk-up ice cream thing. And I'm like, I walk up, and I go, is my order ready? And everyone outside me is wearing masks, even though it's outside. And I'm the only one not wearing a mask. And I look around and I'm like, this is like a Twilight Zone episode. So I was standing there, you know, doing the social distancing. No one was within 12 feet of me, not 6 feet, but 12 feet, everybody. And this older woman, I don't know, somewhere around 65 or 70, drives a nice car. She's there to pick up some food. She gets her order, and as she's leaving, her back is to me. She goes, speaks loudly, can you believe this guy's not wearing a mask? And I looked around. I'm like, who's she talking? Oh, she's talking about me. And at first I was going to say something, and then I have a booming voice if I want to. I turn to her, and I go, bah, and that was, I left it right there. But it's a, that's
Giuseppe, you might have to take the walk of shame completely naked, only wearing a mask.
There you go.
Game of Thrones.
You know, I love to use well-known movie lines for those people that are, you know, how should I say, appropriately culturally versed in the more significant movies of our time. So in the movie Groundhog Day, which I thought was great and I loved it, there's a line where Bill Murray says, morons, your bus is leaving. No, I can't help but think of stuff like that. It's a cookbook.
There you go. To serve mankind. Yeah. So, Paul, are people wearing masks everywhere in California? I heard the governor made some law where you have to wear a mask if you're in public. Is that happening, or what's going on there?
So it varies by county, but okay, yeah, if you came out here, you'd be insane. I was just actually going to mention this. I don't know if you guys still on occasion partake of the evil green weed, but it does, I do it mildly on limited occasions, and it does, you know, open your perceptions and allow you to kind of both think and feel at the same time, right? And when you go out and you see the mask wearing, it's just like, oh my God, it's like a Twilight Zone episode.
It is.
I mean, just most of the stores I go into, by far over 90%. It's not hard to make that claim at all. And it's disgusting to me. I have mostly been unaccosted, but there's been two or three times, including one near fist fight that I told on the air on Setzer Show one time, where another white guy, not a store worker, but an older, white man, he was probably in his 60s, he had gray hair, I don't know, and he was physically imposing. I mean, he was taller and heavier than me, and he comes up with fist clenched, and he goes, "Hey, buddy, put a mask on." Now, the reason he did that is because a security guard was hassling me about not wearing a mask, and I had to school the security guard as I schooled the manager of the store 5 minutes earlier, but the security guard wasn't there for the lecture. And so this guy, he overhears it, and he steps up on me. Literally, he closes the distance. He's within 2-3 feet glaring at me. He's like, "Buddy, put a mask on. You're endangering us." And it's like, dude, you can believe whatever you want, okay? Go live your life. And they actually, a couple of the store employees, I was at the cashier right then and there, and they kind of waved him off. They go, "Hey, it's okay. You know, let him pay. You know, leave him alone, blah, blah, blah." And he says to me, as he's looking over my shoulder, literally, he was that close, hassling me, he says, "What makes you special?" And I said, "Well, I have a brain." And he reports back immediately, "It was you and Trump, huh?" And I just turn my head, I look at him, I say, "What has Trump got to do with it?" It's just, I said, you need like a mental examination. So, and as I leave, I just look at him and I go, "Listen, I'll be outside. You know what I look like." And I was out there sitting on a bench eating my burrito like I would normally do with my dog. And I wasn't looking for anything, but I was ready. And he just walked right by me without making eye contact.
It's how some people take on this role of social enforcer, and they feel the need to, it's their chance to grab a little bit of power and shame you socially. You know, my aunt lives in San Diego, and she was recently going to the grocery store, and she doesn't wear a mask, and they kicked her out of the store. They said, "You can't come in here without a mask." The manager came up to her and a security guard kicked her out of the store. She's 80 years old or 79 years old, kicked her out of the store. Unbelievable.
Sad and sick. Yeah. And it really, the peer pressure of the believers is very palpable. And what I mentioned before about, sometimes being lightly stoned is you could just really feel, you could feel it and sense it more. And to be honest, it doesn't bode well for our future as far as, on the one hand, I'm tired of, people in general just being what they are and who they are. But with this, they're demonstrating to me as well as to you and for everybody to see that we are weak. We will roll over. We will do what we're told. We're fucking spineless pussies and cowards. And it just kind of, I try to suppress the animosity that I feel about this. But it creeps out on occasion in my tone. I've told people, to their face, I go, "Stop wearing that mask. You look ridiculous. You know it inhibits your oxygen, right?"
I've actually told people too, like that insist on wearing masks. I said, "Do you really think you're going to get your freedom back when this is over if you just do what you're told? Do you really think that?" And, one guy really, I could see the gears in his head turning. He was with his wife, and so he didn't say anything, but I could see the gears in his head turning. "We're coming up to the last minute. This went by so fast, Paul. We're going to have you back on real soon. You're a real character. You have your own way of thinking, and you have a real personality. You're not one of the clones that we see everywhere, and I do really very much appreciate that."
I'd like to interject quickly that next week's guest is the heroic Dr. Judy Mikovits. And she, on June 23rd, she and the nurse, Aaron Olszewski, who exposed the fraud of the COVID-19 in New York, are leading a rally in Sacramento at the state capitol, 8 a.m. to 12 noon with other speakers. So it's called A Call for Change, and then next Saturday she'll be able to tell us all about it. And, Paul, you should definitely call in next week, or I can call you, I guess. So.
Yeah.
So what is that rally, Giuseppe?
June 23rd. It is Tuesday, June 23rd at the Sacramento A California State Capitol starts at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time with speakers at 12 noon. So definitely support.
I just can't help but think, why didn't they make it on a Saturday? Because, you know, a lot more people could go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, guys, the music's coming up, so that means we got to stop until next week. Paul, thanks for coming on. Giuseppe, good as always. We'll see you guys next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.